Welcome to Advantage Over, the podcast for the rugby referee community, or simply those in rugby who want to know more about refereeing. Your host today is Keith Lewis. Are you ready? Time on.
So joining me on the podcast today is Andrew Rowland from Rugby Southland down in New Zealand. We'll have a chat about what that means before. But until recently, Andrew was chair of Rugby Southland referees. But he has just handed the reins over to a new chair down there. But in his time as chair, he kind of led and grew the referee organisation down there. And one of the many initiatives that he oversaw is one that I saw not that long ago and wanted to delve into. And that's about the thorny issue, or the troublesome issue around the world, of how do we attract and recruit new referees. So they've done some great stuff down there. So we're going to have a chat with that. So thanks for joining us, Andrew.
Thanks for the opportunity, Keith. Much appreciated.
Cool. So you guys call it your Referee of the Future Scholarship Program, and it's all about attracting and retraining match officials, and especially or initially targeting young match officials. That's what I want to get into. But obviously, most listeners to the Advantage Over podcast are probably up north or elsewhere. So let's just paint the scene of where you are and this, where the geography and the rugby landscape of Southland. So where are we speaking to today?
Okay, so we are probably, I'd almost hesitate to say that we are probably the southernmost rugby playing province in the world. So right at the bottom of the South Island of New Zealand, and our province, it's actually reasonably sparse. I'm probably an hour and a half one-way trip to our furthest point, and that you could probably draw a circle around the province, and that's about where we'd travel to. That would probably be a cover it.
The big cities down there, Invercargill.
No. Invercargill is the city. Lots of little rural towns. So the likes of Gore, Tianao, Winton, you know, these names probably don't mean anything, but these are, you know, towns of, you know, there could be 10,000 in them. So we have a blend of metro rugby. Our premier division is made up of predominantly, well, there's six teams, and four of them would be regarded as metro. There's one that sits a wee bit in between, and then there's definitely a country team. The majority of our Division 1 and 2 would be country-based. So, yeah, country footy. We have Premier Men's and then Senior Women's, and then we have those other two divisions, and then we get into we have President's Grade, and then we get into our age groups. So down to, yeah.
And the number of clubs that you'd facilitate would be?
Oh, good question. I think there's something like clubs in Southland. There's probably 30-odd.
Which, yep, I guess leads to scale into the referee society side as well. So what's the refereeing approach?
So not all of those clubs feature in every grade. You know, there are pockets of clubs, like you'll have the likes of Gore or Eastern Southland, which is, you know, probably almost a subset of Southland geographically, and there'll be sort of 12 clubs within that quite condensed radius. And then for us, it's about making sure that we're putting the best referee that is suited and qualified on those games. And sometimes that means that games, whilst there are referees refereeing in grades below, the reason why they're refereeing in those grades is because it's not the right game for them. And we don't want to set people up to fail just to have a referee on the ground to keep everybody else happy. Basically where we got to.
Cool. And so Rugby Southland referees, what's your membership level look like?
It's been reasonably steady over the last 2 or 3 years. Just a moment, I've got a couple of figures here. So, 2025, we had 56 referees. Actually, we had 63 referees, sorry, four of which were females and 57 which were males. And then 2026, we have 61 referees, 55 are male and six are female.
And you also run an associate referee program as well with
some people might
call them club referees, I guess.
Yeah, sounds like it. Those numbers are included in those numbers that I gave you before. But if I go back to 2025, we had 49 fully registered referees and 14 associates. This year, thus far, we have 51 fully registered referees and two associate referees. We have just recently run a series of associate referee courses. So I would hope that that number increases. And those associate referees tend to operate more in the lower age grade space. And that's only just kicked off for us. They had grading day just Saturday just been. So we'll see. Watch this space.
So that's kind of sets out the scale, and like every referee association around the world, we're kind of always thinking about where the new talent's coming from and how we get more people to jump ship into refereeing or to look at refereeing as a route in. Tell us a little bit about the thought process that sat behind the scholarship program.
Yeah, absolutely, Keith. So I guess during my tenure as chairman, we always do our post-season review, and we were finding that our numbers were relatively stable. Yet there were new competitions coming online, which was putting extra pressure. We were having to shift some competitions or ask for competitions to be shifted from the traditional Saturday time slots to, Thursday nights, Friday nights. Things like that to help us be able to service these games. Our recruitment had probably been a little bit hit and miss in the past. We were just sort of relying upon word of mouth, tap on the shoulder, that sort of thing. So as we were talking before, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for a different outcome, which we were probably guilty of. So yeah, we decided to try and do something a little bit different, and we'd seen a couple of different iterations that New Zealand Rugby had tried with some success. Some of the listeners might have heard of Glenn Jackson, who's currently the Fijian Drua coach, but he had quite a decorated playing career both here in New Zealand and over in the UK. And then when he finished there, he pretty much, I think he hung up his playing jersey one year, and well, might have even been one Saturday, and
I think
picked
it
up
was,
a whistle
yeah.
the next
he
Saturday.
Played for Saracens,
and was, yeah, he did. And within very, very short time, he was refereeing Test rugby and doing it very well. So we sort of looked at that, and they're doing it in the female space as well, as we discussed before, Keith. So we thought, well, what have we got to lose? Rather have tried something and failed than, not to have tried at all. We were also very fortunate that we got we had a funder or a sponsor come on board, and just through the conversation, the result was that they actually were prepared to do some funding for us, and they wanted it tagged specifically for recruitment rather than, just going into the general coffers. So that was probably the catalyst for us to get really serious about these conversations. The result, we're also very lucky that down here we've got another community group that has run sort of scholarship programs in the sporting space for an extended period of time, both playing and coaching. And I was lucky enough to go through that. So I sort of had a little bit of an insight as to what these sorts of programs could offer. And so I said, well, literally, why don't we give this a crack? What have we got to lose?
So what is the offer? What are you offering to interested parties?
So what we did, a lot of it was actually more about giving these young athletes, or giving these athletes, not necessarily young, the opportunity to go through a selection process, because a lot of them haven't. And so whether they were successful or not, we hope that they would walk away from the process with something, you know, something that would help them, whether it be in life or on the paddock. We started off with a focus on young match officials. But coming back to our geography, you know, a lot of down here in Southland, we export a lot of our talent off to university, and the odd one drifts back. But for the majority of them, they, you know, they spread their wings and they keep on going, which is really cool. So we thought, well, okay, if we're investing in them, we probably want to get something back. So that was where we ended up sort of splitting our, I suppose you could say, splitting our votes. Yeah. And of our five recipients this year, we've got two of them are secondary school age, two of them are ex-players, and one is still a current player and university age. And that's and in the female space. So what these successful recipients receive is, aside from a financial contribution, which it's encouraged that it is used for rugby purposes, whether that be a new pair of boots or a gym membership or whatever it might be, they also get additional tutelage and additional training and development sessions over and above our weekly, you know, our normal weekly association ones. And then that's with the likes of mental skills, sports chaplaincy. We've got a dietitian coming in. We've got access. They will have access to our local NPC, so our NPC coaches and training. So that's our Southland Stags. They will get
that's your elite level along. Competition, isn't it? Really?
Yeah. That's our national competition team. So they'll be able to go along and observe them training, and you know, pick the brains of coaches and bits and pieces. So that's pretty awesome. They have one-on-one coaching. And you know, there's an expectation for them that they're doing game plans, and which you wouldn't necessarily expect a first year referee to be doing game plans, but you know, we've selected these said individuals for a reason, because we think we can effectively fast track them, you know, and that they've shown, you know, the resilience that we're looking for, so we can sort of test their mettle a little bit earlier than what we normally would. And that's pretty much what they get as a result of their scholarship. The scholarship is on a year by year basis for a maximum of 3 years. So
just pick you up on the financial side of things, because many countries up here in England and most of the northern sides, referees, we don't get any money. We get expenses, but we don't get paid. There's no match fees involved until you get to the sort of national end of the game. Is that the same there? So is this a different approach to kind of fund? And do you think that changes things?
Yeah, good question. We are the same. It's funny, because over my career, I've always joked with people when they say, do you get paid? It's like, no, I have to pay a sub for the honor of getting abused every weekend. So it's interesting, because a lot of the sports down here, whether it be basketball, touch, netball, the teams actually pay match officials, whether it's $10 a game or whatever it is. Both teams contribute. Rugby is one of very few that don't get paid at club level. Yes, we get expenses, we get mileage, but that's all we get. We felt we wanted to make this, you know, we wanted this to almost be a little bit elitism.
Yeah.
So we wanted people to want to be in that. You're asking someone that's come through old school, you know, for me, no amount of money would change whether I do or don't referee. I do it for the love of it. And I would suggest that probably for the majority of our association, that answer would be exactly the same. In fact, we had one of our scholarship recipients. He goes, I don't want the money.
Yeah.
So that
is interesting. I did some study. We're not talking about big money. We're talking about $500
$500 a year, a season.
Just to say, if you're reaching for your calculator, listener, it's about 200 sterling, 300 US or 400 Australian dollars. So look, it's a decent pair of boots a couple of times a year, and as you say, a gym membership. So it's not a semi-professional contract or anything.
No, definitely not. No.
So that's a really interesting approach. So how's that going? Is it, this is the first time you've run that, or is this?
This is the first time we've run it. We had 12 applicants.
Mm-hmm.
And the qualifying criteria is you had to be either, you could only have refereed a maximum of 1 year.
Right.
So two of our recipients are effectively second year referees.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that, it was just, they went through quite a rigorous, there was quite a process where they had to submit an application. We looked through the applications, we selected a short list, then they had to go through before an interview panel. There was three of us on that interview panel. So there was the chairman of the board, which was myself. There was our appointments officer. And then there was our referee manager. Referee manager. And that was quite an intensive process. We didn't take any prisoners, because mm-hmm. this is all part of the scholarship. Like, if scholarship is in our eyes, you are effectively the best of the best.
Yeah.
So we need to make sure of that. We had a number based on finances, and that number was clearly higher than five.
Yeah.
But five is what we decided on, because we didn't want to just be handing them out to hit a number.
Yeah.
We wanted these to be something special, and we wanted people to aspire to that level. I think we've achieved that.
Can I ask just, what about the other seven? Do you think, obviously, that you had 12 applicants, five got them. What of the other? Does that mean we lose seven people who wanted to be the game, or have they just, they go through the normal society process?
They go through the normal association process. Of those seven, I would say five of them have gone through the normal association process. Rightly or wrongly, if they didn't get the scholarship and didn't referee as a result, did they want to referee in the first place? So yeah. Are they the type of person that we want or need?
Yeah, that's a good provocation, isn't it? But it's an interesting debate. Is it people think, well, actually, have we lost two people that we could have had via a different route? But as you said before, we've got to test these things out and see with those. And if they want to, if those in seven individuals want to referee, they'll still be refereeing.
Yeah, well, that's right. If they had that genuine desire, they would follow through with it, regardless of whether they got a scholarship or not. So, yeah.
Have there been any other sort of challenges to the program? Obviously, it's still early days in it, I guess, but any challenges to share?
I don't think we've run into any just yet, and I hope I'm not putting the commentator's curse on things. I guess just scholarship programs in general. I've seen sometimes some of these scholarship programs are harder to get out of than they are to get into. That was something that I was really clear and strong on from the beginning, that there needs to be, they need to be meeting the criteria. Otherwise, there needs to be exit points. And I'm not saying they miss one meeting and, you know, you're gone. But it needs to be mutually beneficial to everybody. We're committing not only financially, but, you know, investing time in these individuals, and we need to be getting some sort of, we need to be getting payoff and reward for that. And if we're not, well, then, you know, there needs to be a mechanism by which that we can draw a line in the sand and move on. So touch wood, we haven't had any of those conversations yet, and I'm confident with the individuals that we've selected that it's highly, highly unlikely that we're going to have to. Hence the rigor of the initial selection process.
That's right. It sounds like a really interesting initiative, so it's certainly one we'll keep an eye on. So I'd like to check back in with you in maybe a year or so, and even speak to some of the individuals when they get going. It'd be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think of those, of the five, we've got, so two of them were brand new referees, and one of those two has refereed his first senior women's game. And I actually had the other one running touch for me last weekend. And he's not far away from actually picking up the whistle and going solo. So that's awesome.
Can I just pick you up on something we talked about? You mentioned as part of your offering there was about the sports chaplaincy piece. I've seen some stuff around that which looks really interesting. Can you just give it, what is it, and what's the thinking behind it?
How long have you got? I'm about as passionate about this as I am about refereeing. So we have an organisation here. It's called New Zealand Sports Chaplaincy, and we're lucky enough that down here in Southland, we have a husband and wife team, and the husband actually works for Rugby Southland as a paid employee, and this was floated. Once again, it just before I stepped out of the chair, and I thought it was a fantastic idea. We all know that we are going to have times in our career where we think we've been stiffed on selection, or someone's had a crack at us from the sideline, or a coach, or whatever, and as tough as we think we are, we're human beings at the end of the day. And these things do, whether you want to admit it or not, they do affect you. And I always found that if I spoke to other referees, they would always agree with you.
Mm.
Right? Which is actually not always helpful.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need someone to say, oh, I think you might be overreacting there, or you're kind of missing the point.
Yeah.
You know, you're blaming this person, this person, this person. You're blaming the game, all the rest of it. Actually, is there something perhaps out of kilter in your personal life which has led you to react in this way? And I think the comfort of talking to somebody that has in no way, shape, or form got any influence on your career or your pathway, there's a safety in that.
Yeah.
You still get to someone who understands the rugby landscape, but is not like, we all have our referee, we all have our coaches and all the rest of it. But if I go to my coach and say, oh, you know, shit, I'm having a hard time at home, or whatever it might look like, my coach might be 65 or 70 or whatever, and I know what his response is going to be, and it's probably not a helpful one, right? So, we've got this lady who is our sports chaplain, and she comes along to our meetings, and she simply just connects with people there. She doesn't, she might do a little 2-minute spot up the front about various things. The one she did recently was about, you know, negative self-talk and things like that. So, you know, a lot of our T&D meetings are all about, you know, on-field stuff, but we don't necessarily, I don't think we spend enough time training our referees how to actually look after themselves mentally. We train them physically, but we don't train them mentally. And we all know that if you're not in a good space when you step onto the paddock, you're going to be in a worse space when you step off. So
I think the word chaplaincy was the word that jumped out at me, because my dad's in the religious side of things. He's a vicar, retired vicar, and I saw the word chaplaincy. Thought, is this a religious initiative? But it sounds the way you've described it. It's a well-being offer, and those things aren't necessarily the same thing.
And I did have the same reservation as you, Keith. I'm not of the religious persuasion, and I'm like, oh, what's this going to be about? But I think for us, the individual that we've got, and she makes it very, very clear that it's not about this. Ironically, I think I was probably the first one in our association to utilize the service. I had a little mishap recently, a small accident, which could have been a much bigger accident, and it led me to some thoughts that I wasn't overly happy with. Mm-hmm. But to have someone to talk to, and she asked me some thought-provoking questions, one of which I still can't answer, which was around, okay, if I'm coaching referees, and if they perhaps make a mistake or something, for me, I do welcome that because it's a learning opportunity, but yet I won't let myself make mistakes. I won't let myself have those learning opportunities. She goes, why is that? And I'm like,
oh,
I have no idea. So just little things like that. And I know there's been two or three others that have, you know, just sat down over a cup of coffee. She'll meet any of our membership anywhere, anytime, over a cup of coffee and just have a bit of a chat. And there's a couple of referees that I've seen that have, I guess in the past, tied their self-worth to their refereeing performances, and if it doesn't go well, you kind of see them, you know, they become a bit withdrawn and all the rest of it. And I know they've been working with her, and I can see the difference in them, you know, 100%.
It's really interesting, isn't it?
I've had other unions ring up and ask about it. I just think, look, you know, like I do, that refereeing can be extremely, extremely stressful.
And isolated. You talked about driving an hour and a half to a game. That's a long time for you to be in the car on your own after a potential incident, potential issue, a thing, and mulling over the state of your week and your life and all those things as well. So
you can come up with all sorts of weird and wacky scenarios in that time, you know. But to have somebody who's not indoctrinated in refereeing and can give you a different perspective, sometimes that's actually all you need.
Yeah.
As someone to give you a slightly different perspective. You know, we're lucky with Sarah that her personality is perfect. It's perfect for this job. It's perfect for our association. And I think in wider terms, we want people who are considering refereeing to know that we care about them. We care about them as people before we care about them as referees. So we look, you know, you want that warm, inviting environment, and to be known as, we look after our own, you know. We don't hang you out to dry. We don't leave you to solve your own problems, because invariably on your journey, you will have these moments. And from an outsider looking in, that looks bloody scary.
Yeah. I think that's brilliant. I'm glad I asked you about that. I think there's a strap line that I started to use on the rugbyreferee.net stuff, that we are rugby people who referee. And that, what you've just described, is exactly that. That we want to make sure that we look after each other, we look after ourselves, and we are supported in whatever we do because we are rugby people, and that's how rugby people behave. We just happen to do it with whistles in our hands rather than balls. So that's really great.
Absolutely. And I think people look at refereeing as a lonely sport, right? Because they only see you out there in the middle. Yeah. But we are one big whānau. We are one big family, and families look after each other. So it goes hand in hand, and you're not alone. You're not fighting this battle by yourself. You have got so much support, so much love, so much araha around you that, you know, it's a cool place to be. It's a cool group to be part of.
But look, that is a perfect place to end this conversation. We've covered two really important subjects there. I'm really grateful for your time, Andrew. It's great to see both those initiatives is kicking off, and hopefully you, the listeners, taken something out of both sides of it. So thanks for very much for joining
us. Awesome. No, appreciate it, mate. And thanks once again for the opportunity.
That was the Advantage Over podcast from rugbyreferee.net. Hope you've enjoyed what the content that we brought to you on this episode. So what next? Well, there's a few things I'd love you to do now. Firstly, tell me what you thought. Drop me an email at keith@rugbyreferee.net and it'd be great to hear from you. Secondly, please tell your rugby or your referee pals about this podcast. Do that wherever you happen to hang out, whether it's on the internet or somewhere else. Share the links with your groups or your WhatsApp chats. That would be great. And if you leave a rating on the podcast site where you found this pod, that also helps other people to find us. Finally, come and join us in our rugby referee community we've got over on Facebook. We only let referees and match officials into that space, so you'll be with one of 5,000 or so other referees where you can chat with them, ask questions, seek counsel, get opinions on referee-related stuff. It's a fantastic community. Worked really hard to make that happen. So if you head to refsquad.com, that will bounce you into the right place. And if you've done all that and you appreciate what you've heard so far, you can buy me a coffee at rugbyreferee.net/coffee. Anything I get through that support network helps keeps all the things up and running. Rugbyreferee.net is all about helping you become a better referee, and I hope we've done a little bit of that today. So for now, that is Advantage Over.